Welcome back to another episode of People of Product. My name is George Brooks. We're in the middle of a short series on the basics of product. And as People of Product has grown, we've continued to talk to many of you, innovators, creative leaders, practitioners around the world of product. But after almost 100 episodes, we realized one of the biggest challenges was actually the basics of product. Digital products and services are taking all different shapes and sizes as the world grows so quickly, from artificial intelligence to blockchain, metaverse, and more. But the core reality is still true. The best products and experiences are built by creative people working together to explore possibilities and build the future. Today, we're exploring what is probably one of the most challenging things to continuously do, to come back to, and that is alignment. How do you work with a diverse group of people, capabilities, experience levels, and influences, all to stay aligned on what ought to be done next? So let's talk about that. Hey, George.
Hey, Dan.
You know that line that I use all the time, which is that we're...
Which one?
Oh, yeah, I know. I have a lot of sayings, don't I? The Georgisms.
The Georgisms. Yeah, we should do an episode on that.
That's all on the Georgisms? Yeah. Well, one of them, and probably right. The one I use the most, is we're in the business of people. Mm-hmm. We just happen to design and build products, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a great one.
Right.
I mean, I think it's true for any company. You're in the business of people. You just happen to do whatever it is you're doing. But when you're working with people that are... different, that have different backgrounds, different experience levels, different focuses, etc. It is incredibly difficult to keep them aligned on what you're trying to get done.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something you've seen? I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, we know. Maybe it's a little softball. It's a little softball, right?
Yeah, and I think why it's so hard is because it's so important. I mean, even back to kind of why we're getting back to the basics is that, you know, we mentioned the most creative products are built by some of the most creative, adaptive, you know, intelligent teams. But bringing individuals like that together is not easy. And I think that's why it's so important. I don't know. And maybe this is just a broad generalization, but I feel like the hardest things or the most important things are the hardest,
to do.
And it doesn't matter what kind of team you're leading, but... Mm-hmm. Just within our space, it's incredibly important when you're bringing individuals that are creative, that are curious, that see the world through kind of this digital lens, it opens up a lot of questions. So if you were invited to a product team, you step in the room, one, who are you people? You know, I may not know you.
I don't trust you.
Different skill sets. What are we here to do? Kind of like, what are we building? The why behind it.
Yep.
So kind of like the who, what, where, why. I mean, mm-hmm. You have to answer all of those questions. And so, and it's really difficult because if you were to slide a sheet of paper with those questions to everyone, there would be so many different answers because of just unique perspectives.
Yeah. And people don't err towards alignment, right? They err towards dysfunction.
Yeah.
Do you remember when we used to interview new employees at Crema?
Uh-huh.
And we would do it as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And we would get together and we'd interview the person and it would usually be going pretty well. And then we'd step back away and it was like, okay, you know, the person will walk out. Thanks for coming. You know.
Yeah.
And then we turn to the team and we go, hey, what'd you guys all think?
Yeah.
And the team would be like, yeah, that's a great interview. That's everything. And then one person would go, did you see the face they made when we asked that one question?
Right.
And then everybody be like,
oh yeah.
Oh yeah. That's right. And then it would just like barrel roll snowball from there to just like grabbing pitchforks and like going to like track the person down in the street.
Right.
It always errs towards negativity. I mean, like the internet proves this, right? But like towards negativity, towards dysfunction, towards does not often move towards people getting aligned.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept and could probably be explored further at another time, but there's also a sign of protection there.
Yeah.
Like when you get a team that's aligned and you want to introduce in maybe another person, another personality.
That's a threat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That could be another episode.
Well,
anyways.
But it kind of goes to that there's a core things that are true inside of teams and often why they don't work.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you're a big fan of Pat Lencioni and his work,
The
Five Dysfunctions
of a Team. Just broadly.
Yeah. I mean, he's a brilliant author and speaker, But maybe you can unpack what does he, how does he refer to this? He talks about this, there being five clear dysfunctions of teams. What does that look like?
And you know, you're always a little hesitant when someone says, you know, five dysfunctions or the 10 irrefutable principles. Yeah. But just in our experience, we can not necessarily prove, but we can probably affirm that he's right on cue with this. And so, you know, he has five and they kind of, they get shaped in a period and they build off one another. And the idea of like, there's the absence of trust. There's the fear of conflict from that. And then there's lack of commitment, avoidance of accountability, and then the inattention to results. And you, just by naming those, you can probably see how they build on one another. But first, there's an absence of trust. And so the way he frames it is it's not necessarily a trust of like, you're reliable. Like if I'm driving over this bridge, I'm trusting the reliability of the bridge.
Right. I trust this chair right now.
Right. Exactly. That I won't fall back or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And again, that is an important aspect of trust, but he talks more about it from an aspect of vulnerability. So if you enter into a room with your teammates, you want to have this almost like this, this feeling of safety that whatever I say, whatever opinion, idea, it's not going to be held against me.
Right.
I want to be able to trust individuals like that. So there's this idea of being vulnerable. And that builds into the next of fear of conflict, because if you don't trust the individuals around you, you're probably not like, I'm not going to say what I really think. I'm not going to challenge. I'm not going to debate. I'm not going to have a disagreement with the understanding that it's not going to be held against me.
Right.
And I'm going to be able to interact with this person who, or these people in a way that's actually constructive debate. So likely you're going to have boring meetings. You're probably
I've been in some boring meetings.
You'll just touch the surface. Yeah. No one's really going to say what they really think for fear again of maybe the office politics. And so there's that. So again, absence of trust then leads to this fear of conflict. Mm-hmm. And then the next one is lack of commitment. Cause think about it. If you're not having the real conversations and you're kind of thinking like, I'm not going to put my, you know, stick my neck out for this.
Right.
I'm not going to necessarily fully commit. I'm not going to fully commit to what's going on because
I don't agree, but I'm not going to voice that I don't.
Yeah. And you, it's hard to agree when things are ambiguous because no one's really truly saying what they think. And so you kind of just have this laissez-faire like attitude of like, man, I'm not going to stick my neck out on the line for this.
Right.
And so, so you can already tell even through the first three that that's not a team you really want to be a part of.
Right.
Then you get to avoidance of accountability. And so why would you hold yourself or anyone else to accountable when you have no idea what you've committed to?
Right. Oh my goodness. this is something
really?
we used to talk about that. You can't hold someone accountable to something they did not commit to.
It's not fair, honestly, or a kind thing to do.
Yeah.
And so if you don't trust one another and you aren't willing to have good constructive conflict to where you can actually create good levels of commitment, you're not going to hold yourself or anyone accountable, which then at the end, the tip of the iceberg,
just falls apart,
which is what usually everyone sees. We didn't hit our results.
Yeah.
It's the inattention to results. Well, it's almost impossible to hit any sort of a result if no one's accountable to anything. And so there's stagnation. And I would say, and I would guess you would say the same thing, that yes, you can see objectively we didn't hit results, but you can also feel it.
Oh yeah.
You know, you can walk into a room and if a team's not working well, you can just be like, oh, they're not getting anything done. And you probably don't even have to ask a question. You can just feel it. Mm-hmm. You can feel like, no one's being vulnerable. You're just kind of glassing over things. There's people walking on eggshells. I can tell that person wants to say something, but they're not.
Yep.
They're afraid of someone or something in this room. And it's just stagnates.
We've had projects or clients that we've either the first time that we walked into their spaces, we felt it on their teams.
Right.
Or we really struggled to get our teams to align, back to kind of the point of this conversation, between us and the client.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell even months later when you walked into this space and the client's in the room and we're in the room that it was like, man, this still doesn't feel right.
Right.
Like we should be addressing this immediately because I can't imagine anything's getting done at the pace that we want it to be.
Yeah.
Right.
And we've been in conversations before either with industry peers or, you know, you start talking about, well, the first step, really, you need to build back that trust. It can kind of seem kind of touchy-feely.
Touchy-feely.
Oh, yeah, it's just like,
we just
need to get the results.
Crap.
But But if you think about it, if you want the tip of the iceberg, the results to be shown and to be really what you wanted to hit, you've got to start underneath the surface. And so to get a team that's dysfunctional to functional, you have to start at the base of the pyramid, which is trust, which then can ladder up to good constructive debate and so forth.
Okay, that's great. the challenge is
easy, right?
Yeah, because basically what we've said is we're trying to get, you know, product teams, cross-functional teams to get aligned around a shared vision, a shared problem that they're trying to solve. We talked about that in previous episodes. We're trying to get them to get started and then to stay aligned. So you've got these innovative, diverse capabilities, experiences, perspectives, but generally speaking, errs towards dysfunction instead of alignment. Well, how can we possibly ever believe that teams will ever get aligned then, or that we can actually do this kind of work?
Right. It is possible, but it takes a lot of work. It's super hard. And actually, Kai Haley, who's the director of product design for growth in international Coinbase, shares a little bit about this, specifically from the word usage of shared language.
One of the things that I see that we always struggle with is shared language, and building this alignment and even just shared understanding of what is the problem to solve and how to prioritize which problem to solve first. And so when you go into these conversations, you know, if you go into a conversation, oftentimes it's like, you know, we need a stronger relationship between a cross-functional relationship, right? Between our engineers and our UX and our product folks. And if you have that foundation, then at least you have a place to start from, which is we know how to talk to each other. We have shared language.
I love that idea of if we're not using the same words, or not using the same words in the same way, right? So if we don't mean the same thing when we're coming in, then it's going to be really hard to stay aligned on what are we trying to do together. We have this space in our Notion knowledge base. So if you're not familiar with Notion, it's a place to kind of just put all the information. You can organize it as a project management tool or as a, like a repository of truth. Is how we kind of use it for our company. And one of the areas in there is called our jargon library,
right?
Our glossary of words. And it's important because we use terms, you know, like, what is a retrospective,
right?
Or what does a sprint mean? Or what is a story point? Or what is the back burner or whatever? Like these terms that we just kind of assume everybody knows, and people kind of pretend like they do. And then you wonder like, hey, why are you doing that like that over there? And you realize it's because they didn't understand what we were saying. It just even basics of language.
Right.
Key to getting a team aligned.
Shared language and even a shared understanding of what something might look like. I remember we had this probably happened several times, but a team will come in, we'll work with them, and they seem really well aligned. And then we go through an exercise, like everyone take a minute to draw what they think this looks like on the board.
The crazy eights,
And then you realize, and then they're all looking at each other going like, oh, wow, we did not have a shared whatever, language, understanding of what it might look like, vision. And so then the work happens of bringing everyone together. And that's, if you go back to Lencioni's dysfunctions, they may have had trust, but they, when it comes to shared language, how can you have constructive debate if you're not even sharing kind of first principles of what this might look like, the basics of what might look like? And so that's a principle, just a mental model of thinking is like, if you don't have some level of shared knowledge, okay, let's get it down to first principles. What are we actually talking about here? Which is, I think, what Kai was mentioning around this shared language.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. What one thing that I think we run into on a regular basis is what I refer to as the, there's like the honeymoon phase. You come together as a team, which is like, man, we're
this
finishing. We're finishing each other's sentences or sandwiches, depending on if you're into Disney movies. But then there's this phase where you go, like, oh man, we're not operating as well as I thought we were going to. We're not doing
right
as good as I thought we were going to be doing. It's not as fast as I thought it was going to be going. Why is this person even in the room? You know, like there's this.
I'm more annoyed.
Yeah.
Than I thought I might be.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes it's referred to as the trough of despair.
Yes.
Right. Which is to say, like, there's no way to fix this. It's always going to be this way. It's the worst. And we know from experience, both in startups go through this trough of despair because, like, it's that part where you have to find product market fit, or teams go through this as well, where it's just that product. You're hitting that ground of like, this is not quite right. Can we turn back up to get back up on that trajectory that's going to get us doing good work?
Right.
Have you seen that? Is there a way to kind of think through that, I guess?
Yeah. And it's a fairly common principle, but this idea of forming, storming.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Norming and performing. And I think it's a Six Sigma term.
Yep.
And done a little bit of research on it, but it makes a ton of sense because, as you mentioned, the honeymoon. So, you know, you come together and you form a team.
Right.
And if you're in product, that happens every time.
Yeah, you have to.
Because even if you're working with the same team, maybe on a multi-year product, individual stakeholders are going to change. Mm-hmm. Even in a startup, you start with founders and customers. Then, you know, if you raise a Series A, then you got investors. So you're always, for the most part, there's new forming, you know, that kind of like coming together.
Right.
And so as you come together, a lot of the forming is, again, you're learning each other's skill set, who's going to do what, maybe what's our roadmap, what are we trying to accomplish? We're all coming together around this vision. And so there's this, this
what
forming.
Problem are we solving? Kind of some of the things we talked about in previous episodes.
Right. But then there's the storming phase.
Yeah.
And when you think about storming, it's like, okay, you know, I think of maybe turbulent waters, you know, kind of rocky. Well, that would be correct because at some point there's some level of just, again, I had maybe a unique perspective of how this was going to go.
Yeah. Expectation even.
Yeah. I had an expectation because we're all faced, and we mentioned this before at the beginning of a team, there's these unknowns, mm-hmm. but you're starting to fill in those gaps yourself based off maybe your own personal experience with teams or anything really.
Or life or family or whatever. Yeah.
I'm also doing the same thing. And so when we get to something where maybe those gaps are kind of tested or stress tested, mm-hmm. pressure tested, if you will, we may buckle or at different times, you know, we may get triggered at different ways to where it's just like, huh, I thought this way, you thought this way, or I have a different solution because I've done research on this industry. Well, I've also done research, but on a different industry and they solved it this way.
Yeah.
So there's all these storming factors, different skill sets, different expectations. And that storming phase, depending on how you approach it, can actually last quite a long time.
Well, and it goes back to Pat Lencioni's, where it's like, if you don't have that trust built in to be willing to go through the conflict of the storming stage to get to a commitment level, then you won't survive it.
Right.
And we've had client experiences, or we've had friends that have gone through, you know, business partnerships where it's been like, or marriages for that matter, you know, we're like, why can't we get through this phase?
Yeah.
And there's this lack of the ability to go, we kind of should have expected it.
Right. You have to name it.
It's going to happen.
It's like, we're not doing well.
Right. Right.
And it can be as simple as that. You know what? We're just not doing well. Let's talk about that.
And I think that even if you can, if you're listening to this now and you're just putting together a team, expect that it's going to come.
Right.
Because you're going to have the honeymoon period where you think that these are the most beautiful people you've ever worked with and they could do no wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And they will love you always and ever.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, everything they say is beautiful. And then it's like, well, why did you say it like that?
Right.
What was that face?
Right. 2 months later, they're always wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, okay. I think we've talked about this on the podcast before. When you and I started our partnership at Crema, early on, we used to have this little ritual, if you will, where we would get together every Friday morning at Mildred's Coffee Shop right over here. That crappy couch that they would cover with a sheet so that they couldn't see how crappy it was. Yeah, they've since upgraded. But we would sit, and I think the basics, I mean, every week it was different, but we joked that the basic question was, how did I piss you off this week?
Mm-hmm.
And then you would be like, okay, let's talk about it. And, you know, and then, how did you piss
then
me
how
off?
How did I? Week? Right, exactly.
And it was just a simple recognition of, it's not perfect.
Right.
And we need to figure out how to do this better together.
Right.
Now, we don't have to do that as much now as we used to.
Right.
Every once in a while, it still comes up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely something we intentionally did and created a discipline around.
Right.
And I think teams often ignore it because they assume we're all professionals here. Just get back to work.
We'll get through. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what we forget is we're all people.
Yeah. Human beings.
And we cause problems.
Yes, we do.
And so Lencioni also talks about trust in the gap. And so there is this gap between when there's ambiguity and you're not for sure maybe what someone said, or you don't have all the context, that's where a little bit of distrust or a little bit of skepticism can come from.
Right.
And that's where kind of that storming can start. And so if you're just putting a team together, the biggest way to close that gap is to start thinking about the norming phase already.
Yeah.
And putting things in place of how will we behave
right
when this happens, because right. we know it's going to happen. And so what are some of the ways that we do that? What are some of the ways that, or even teams in general, should be thinking about norming?
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to accomplish this. One thing is just to get in the same room, right? Mm-hmm. You can get the same room and kind of talk these things out. And again, like us, sitting down and having a cup of coffee, break bread together.
Right.
It's a really powerful tool. But that isn't always reasonable, and it can't happen all the time, because then you get that meeting fatigue and
right.
you know, it's almost too expensive to do. So I think there's some asynchronous ways to do it, but I think early on, definitely have a conversation. As much as possible, step into the space, use radical candor if you want, yep. or use different feedback mechanisms where you say, hey, I want to provide the feedback. This is how I'm experiencing this moment. Here were the expectations I had and how they're mismet, mm-hmm. et cetera. And so how do you can just name those clearly with enough right. trust to know we're going to get better at it? We talked about it in a previous episode, but one of the things that's really key, that if you didn't make it before, this is the time to make it, which is a team charter.
Yep, 100%.
It's such a simple tool to just identify, here's how we believe things ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
Here's everybody's roles. Here's the expectations we have on this project and this particular team, how we will operate.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody commits, back to Lencioni,
yep.
commits to that's going to be true for us.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hold yourself accountable because you wrote it down.
Right.
And you have to come back to it. And if right. you don't come back to it, if you don't have the pissed off coffee meeting,
right.
then you won't remember that you need to come back to that conversation on a regular basis. So a team charter is absolutely huge. And then one of the things that we look for, especially with client relationships, but I think it's true with any team, is small wins. You're looking for momentum.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in that trough, it can feel like all I want to do is not go from like the bottom of the trough. I just want to plateau. You know, I want to like climb a cliff to get out as fast as possible. I want somebody to throw me a lifeline to just rip me out. It's not exactly how it happens. What instead you have to think is like, I need to create momentum, a flywheel
mm-hmm.
that's going to start curving back up and out. And sometimes it just takes a couple small wins.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what? I agree with you on that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I will compromise here.
Yep.
You know what? Let's try that experiment and see where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And being willing to see those things out and see where the potential results are, and then go, okay, that worked. Let's try that again. And then that worked. That one didn't. That's okay. You know, like there's trust here,
mm-hmm.
and learning to kind of look for that momentum yep. Is a big piece of it, I think.
Yeah. Those little disciplines, frequent feedback is a great discipline. Don't wait, you know, a quarter, 6 months, or even a year to give someone feedback.
Yes.
You know, put that down in your team charter.
Yeah.
We're going to practice frequent feedback.
Yeah.
And that goes with clients too, or stakeholders, depending on, you know, what kind of side of the business you're on, is having those one-on-ones with a client.
Yeah.
How did we do?
Yep.
Or is there any context you're missing?
Right.
Just building those can help create, again, more trust to help your team norm together. And from a business ownership standpoint, or even, you know, if you're leading a team and maybe you have your own values, or you have your own, okay, our vision for this team for this year is X.
Yeah.
And here's our strategy to get there. The team charter, the values, that again, those are the way, this is how we're going to behave and treat each other as we get there. So again, we have our own company values. So many companies have values.
Yeah.
And
coming back to them often.
Right. And what's refreshing to me is when you hear companies, or, you know, you listen to people, you ask them a question, you know, do you feel like your company lives by those values? Like, really?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they're just in the handbook. Yeah. But when someone says, oh, yeah, yeah, we really do. We you know, we are graded on that. We talk to each other in that way. If we're not, you know, behaving or treating each other in a certain way, we can always go back to our values. That's what they're there for.
Yeah.
So holistically, that can create some level of norm of like, no matter what, when we get in the room, this is the baseline.
Yeah.
But then we might have a team charter. Or yep. something else on top of
and
that.
Those, it's almost like the same pyramid where you're layering on top of things yep. to kind of say, our purpose and our values have to be true. That has to be the non-negotiable. If we can't stick to that, then there's the, now how are we going to work together?
Right.
Or what's the true problem we're solving? You know, and kind of layers up to make sure then we can get to that last stage, which is
performing.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, think about it. It's not rocket science. If you have individuals that are competent, I mean, you're going to bring people to a team on purpose for yep. some reason, some role. And if you can work well together through trust and commit to one another and hold yourself accountable to results. It's not rocket science. It's hard work.
It is hard, but it's
very
not,
hard. Yeah. I would say
it's not complicated.
It's not, it's complex. But again, you can do it again. Yeah. So if you can actually get to that point to where everyone trusts one another,
yes,
and everyone is again working at their best competence, then you're gonna perform.
Yep.
You really are.
Yep. And it's a beautiful thing to see mm-hmm. when it happens.
Oh yeah.
Now I read an article, and I don't have the science to back this up, but I'm gonna quote the internet, if you will, which is that on average. There was a study on teams that were kind of went through these phases, and the pretty norm is that it takes up to 4 months for this to be done well. Now, I think intentional teams that know it's coming, mm-hmm. that say, hey, you know, the norming, storming, no, wait, forming, storming. It's a lot of the ormings.
Yeah.
Storming or the forming, storming, norming, yeah. and performing stages are going to come.
Mm.
The five dysfunctions of a team are where we're going to err. Let's name that, mm-hmm. get prepared for it,
right.
get ahead of it, have those pissed off Friday coffee right. meetings, and get used to building in the rhythm. You can shorten that time drastically. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to take 4 months,
right.
but it will happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a question. Are you going to let it take 4 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years,
right.
or are you going to address it in the course of a few days, weeks, or a month?
Right. So aligning and people, we're just hard work.
Oh, gosh,
we really are. It takes a lot of diligence to, as a leader, as a product leader, to align teams well of all sorts, different topics that we talked about today, including, again, who's going to do the work? Who do we bring, you know, Collins, you know, who are the people we're going to bring onto the bus?
Yes.
And which seats are we going to put them in?
Yep.
But then once you get on that bus, it's like, okay, how do you work well together? And then once that happens, you can really start achieving results around the plan that you wanted to.
Yeah, that's right. So you've clearly set those expectations with the team. You've kind of named how we're going to work together. You're having the disciplines to build in. But sometimes it's helpful to have an artifact, to have a thing that you draws you back, like a team charter. I mean, that's an artifact that we can come back to on a regular basis. We've kind of been talking a lot about like the formation of teams and the people coming together and getting aligned around a shared problem. But at a certain point, we got to figure out what is it that we're going to build? Mm. How long is it going to take? Where are we going in this adventure together?
Oh, interesting.
A little
sounds like a map,
maybe a map that has roads on it. Yeah. So in the next episode, we're going to dive into this idea of roadmaps. It's a little bit controversy.
You know what? It's controversy of that controversial.
It's a little controversial in the sense that not everybody agrees that you should be thinking about what is
right.
2 to 5, 10 years down the road, if you because it changes so much. But I think a tool like a roadmap can be a really great asset to make sure that you stay aligned as you move forward to maybe change the future.
Can't wait.
This episode of People of Product was produced by Larissa McCarty with support from Julie Branson and Steph Inger. Our hosts are George Brooks and Daniel Linhart. People of Product is brought to you by Crema, a digital product agency. We believe that creativity, technology, and culture can help individuals and organizations thrive. Learn more at crema.us.